From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Warming weather is a great excuse to get outside. The Natural History Society of Maryland offers hands-on opportunities for lay people and experts to observe nature's wonders shoulder to shoulder out in the field. We meet educator and master gardener Judy Fulton, who hosts bi-monthly workshops that focus on identification of native and non-native plants and invasives. And naturalist and entomologist Nick Spiro tells about fossil hunting meetups, opportunities to raise moths and butterflies at home, and the many resources available to the public.
We have professional entomologists, professional botanists, professional ichthyologists, professional ornithologists. We really span all the disciplines in science that give their time freely to the Natural History Society.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Quote, those who dwell as scientists or laymen among the beauties and mysteries of the earth are never alone or weary of life, end quote. Biologist, author, and conservationist Rachel Carson said that. She reflected often on the wonder found in observing the natural world, and her thought is a jumping-off point for our discussion today, as we're joined by educators from the Natural History Society of Maryland. It's the Society's mission to offer opportunities for laymen and experts to learn shoulder-to-shoulder in the field. Later in the show, we'll meet a master gardener who helps people identify native and non-native plants. Joining us now is naturalist and retired entomologist Nick Spiro. He's talking with us today about fossil hunting meetups and workshops about how to raise moths and butterflies at the Natural History Society of Maryland. Welcome back to On the Record, Nick.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So first, talk to us a bit about your background. You're an entomologist, but we've spoken to you before about wild edible foraging. How did you become immersed in such a range of
It probably started at a very young age. I can remember my mother asking me where my socks were at probably 5 or 6, and I'm sure I told her maybe not exactly the truth. One sock probably had a snake in it, and the other sock may have had toads. And that's when I started, at a very young age. The natural world has always fascinated me, whether it be plants or animals, minerals, fossils. It's just been a great place for me to explore and live.
So you're involved with something called the Fossil Club. What happens at Fossil Club meetings at the Natural History Society?
So our inaugural meeting was the first Wednesday of May. We meet the first Wednesday of every month. We had Dr. Stephen Godfrey come out and give the keynote speech. It was a phenomenal talk about Megalodon. Megalodons are the ancestors of the great white sharks.
And Dr. Godfrey is?
Dr. Godfrey is a curator of the Calvert Marine Museum. So we have phenomenal speakers, professional PhD paleontologists that give freely of their time to come up and give talks. And we have some incredible fossil collecting trips that are only going to be available to our members. These are places that are off limits unless you know somebody. And we're very fortunate in that we know a lot of individuals with access to some phenomenal collecting sites.
So give us a tease. What would be a phenomenal collecting
right
site?
Right on this table would happen to be the Maryland State Fossil.
That's Maryland has a state absolutely. Fossil?
Absolutely. Yes, this is one of the first fossils that was described from the New World in Europe. So this is Ichthyophora quadriquastata, four raised veins. And that's actually the Maryland State Fossil.
It's a snail.
It's a gastropod, yes, exactly.
Or it was. Is it extinct? It's
extinct. This particular species is extinct. I'm going to hand this to you. These are fossilized sea stars, starfish.
It looks like a piece of a terracotta flower pot.
Similar.
Except it's more golden, less red.
Yeah, it's limonite. It's got limestone in it. And you can actually see fossilized sea stars in there. Starfish. Pretty cool. So these are the types of things that we'll take members of the Fossil Club to. a lot of different locations, and they can bring their fossils in and we'll identify them for them. It's a great place for novices as well as experts to meet.
Why should people care about fossils? Why should they? What's the importance?
They're very important. They're very important to understand where we came from. So these fossils are from the Miocene. That's 5 million years ago. And we have fossil formations in Western Maryland that are Devonian. So you're talking a whole different time frame. It's important to understand the different strata that these fossils come from to better understand where our place on this earth.
How does it do that?
It depends on your belief system. There's some people that believe the Earth is only 6,000 years old, and I won't argue with that. I think it's much older than that. The strata will tell you what age these animals came from. So we have we've got things that happened in the Cambrian period. We've got trilobites, phenomenal animals no longer exist.
Trilobites.
They were three-lobed. They were animals that dominated the seafloor at an early, early age. They no longer exist, but their fossils are plentiful. So it's just pretty neat to see things that existed when life expanded and exploded on the ocean floor.
That's naturalist and entomologist Nick Spiro here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about programs at the Natural History Society of Maryland. The other ongoing club, or one of them, is the Lepidoptera Club. What is that?
We call it the Lep Club, just a little bit easier to say. Lepidoptera is the order of insects that both butterflies and moths are in, and we raise butterflies and moths, in particular Luna moths, Cecropia moths, Polyphemus moths. These are Native American silk moths that are beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The colors, the shapes, Lunas have really long sweeping tails. We've raised Hickory horn devils. This is the largest caterpillar in North America, about the size of a hot dog with ornamentation. A lot of people see it and they're a bit taken back by it. It'll move its head in a defensive posture and has horns on it. So we raise all of these things. We teach proper husbandry. We teach the proper food plant because each species may require a different type of tree, shrub, plant, whatever. And we teach all of that, and we send kids home with caterpillars to raise. And this is kids of all ages. I've had parents ask me, we have kids, can we bring them? And I said, if you don't bring your kids, you can't come out. So we're very kid-friendly and very family-friendly.
Do you provide materials?
We do. We provide the caterpillars of various species, and this will be our third year doing this, and it's phenomenal. The response has been really phenomenal.
Why should people raise butterflies and moths?
Because they're beautiful. They're part of our natural world. This is something that used to be here in numbers, and because of gypsy moth sprays years back, the numbers of butterflies and moths have really declined. So these are Native Americans. We're not allowed to raise any exotics, and they should be here. They're part of the natural world. For example, Cecropia moths and some of the other silk moths that I've mentioned, these things deposit anywhere from 200 to 500 eggs. The caterpillars can be well in excess of 3 to 4 inches. And you're probably thinking, oh, that must eat a lot of leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It does, but when migrant birds fly up from Central and South America, they expend a lot of energy to get up here, and they're going farther than Maryland. So when one of these birds sees a big caterpillar, that's a big boost of protein for that bird. Yeah, that bird is going to make a meal out of that, and it's going to recoup a lot of energy that it lost. So animals that produce high numbers of eggs, it's called high fecundity, also have high mortality. You only need a couple of those things to come through as adults to get the next generation going. But they provide a secondary service to these migrant birds that come up from South America, Central America.
You talked about kids coming to meetings of the LEP Club. How do kids react to both the creatures and to that kind of information about the survival of the fittest that's going on?
I have a kid that comes in and he bumped me five. Mr. Nick, we got 5 Lunas to come out. He was so excited, and his excitement was palpable in the building. So when kids come in and share that excitement, I think maybe you're doing something right. you're sharing your knowledge. I mean, I was fostered by many people, mentored by many people, and to be able to give that back is a great feeling.
The Natural History Society of Maryland is having a gala on Saturday. Its theme is the Cabinet of Curiosities. Where does that term come from?
Well, basically, in Victorian times, people went out into the natural world and collected curiosities. And a lot of people may not have known what they were, but they brought them back and put them in a cabinet. Look at this odd thing we found out in the woods. So our theme for this gala is going to be the Cabinet of Curiosities in the Victorian sense. Hopefully people will just dress up in Victorian style. We've brought the best of our collections. We have fossils. We have minerals. We have birds. And we're very fortunate in that we have professional entomologists, professional botanists, professional ichthyologists, professional ornithologists. We really span all the disciplines in science that give their time freely to the Natural History Society. So all of these curators will be there, and we've taken the best from our collection downstairs, and we have it on display for this gala.
Your collection downstairs. Explain.
And our collection downstairs is going to be open to people that come to the gala. So we'll have a guided tour, and this is the first time we've done this. They'll be able to see the cabinets that we have of, you name it. We have mammals, we have birds, we have insects, we have minerals, we have herbarium sheets. So if you're interested in the natural world, this is going to be a great event. It's going to be a lot of fun, and you'll be able to talk to people that are very knowledgeable about all these different topics. People are going to be astounded when they see what we have in the building.
What are you most excited to share with someone from all those holdings, that the ones that you're familiar with?
So we've got some fossils that are incredible. Have you ever seen a fossil bird footprint?
I don't think so.
Yeah, we've got that. We have fossil turtles. We have fossilized beetles. We have minerals from Maryland that you'll never collect again. So these are mines that currently are under a parking lot, a housing development. So these are really significant collections. We have Indian artifacts from Baltimore City that were collected in the late 1800s. Probably not going to find too many in Baltimore City under all the buildings anymore. So I'm not really excited about any one thing. I'm excited about most everything we have in the building.
Well, I'm really grateful to you for telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you come out.
Naturalist and retired entomologist Nick Spiro. The Fossil Club meets the first Wednesday of every month, and the Lepidoptera Club, the Lep Club, to raise butterflies and moths, that meets the last Thursday of each month. All the programs are at the Natural History Society of Maryland at 6908 Belair Road in Baltimore County. So is the Cabinet of Curiosities Gala this Saturday from 6 to 10 p.m. We have links to information about all this at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break now on the record, and then we'll ask a master gardener about how to identify plants and stay clear of invasives. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about programming at the Natural History Society of Maryland. We spoke to naturalist Nick Spiro about finding fossils and learning to raise butterflies and moths. And joining us now is Master Gardener Judy Fulton. She's a volunteer educator at the Natural History Society and a consultant through the University of Maryland Extension. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you very much, Sheila.
What is a Master Gardener?
Master Gardener is a volunteer who works with the University of Maryland Extension and helps homeowners and sometimes organizations with gardening and landscaping questions.
Helps in what way?
There's a lot of education. There's several programs. There is, for instance, one called Baywise, where people can ask for the master gardeners to come out and certify their property as helping the Chesapeake Bay.
So you come and you look at what's growing there?
What's growing, how water runoff is handled, and there's a yardstick with a whole bunch of different measures. Do you fertilize your lawn? When do you do that? How do you mow your lawn? Do you grow native plants? And you get a sign that says that you are being friendly to the Chesapeake Bay.
And is this consultation, is there a charge for it?
There's no charge for it. And you can also, if you would like, be part of the Grow It, Eat It program, where there is information provided on growing fruits and vegetables and herbs. That's another program that Master Gardeners offers. There is information about composting. Anything having to do with gardening, the Master Gardeners will usually be available to help. Sometimes there is a table set up at events called Ask a Master Gardener, and you can go with questions and get those dealt with.
Can anybody call a Master Gardener for assistance?
Yes. And you can also contact the University of Maryland Extension Home and Garden Information Center directly to ask questions. The contact is by email.
And we will put that link on our website at the On the Record page. What happens at the Natural History Society of Maryland's What's This Plant workshops?
What's This Plant is meant for anyone to come and bring plants or just bring yourself and learn how to identify plants. So you could bring a sample from the woods or from your property, showing as many different features of that particular plant as you can. For instance, if it's a plant that blooms, that's a perennial, for instance, you'd want to bring it when it's blooming, if possible. And then there are people of all different expertises. They work together in groups to identify the plants. Some are very easy. The experts can just glance at the plant and say, oh, I know that is, for instance, a Virginia bluebell, which is one of our native plants. Other times, it's very complicated. Maybe they're plants that look similar. Maybe you've brought it because that's when you found it, but it's not blooming. It could be more difficult if it's a grass.
Why?
Because the flowers for grasses are very small, and those are important for identifying the grass. So if you don't identify the plant immediately, you're in these groups and you work through, well, let's look at this plant really carefully. How do the leaves look? How are they positioned on the stem? What color is the stem? If it's a shrub, what does the twig look like? Then you step through what's called a key. We mostly use books, but sometimes there are keys online that ask questions. What are the roots like? How many seeds and in what kind of configuration are the seeds on the plant? So we can take, I'd say less than a minute to identify a plant, or a very hard one can take an hour to identify. But it's fun because you're working with people. Some people this is the first plant they've ever worked on identifying, and other people, there's a botany professor from Towson who comes frequently, or there's a grad student or an undergraduate student, say from College Park. So you have people of all different expertises, and they all contribute what their view is and how to proceed to identify the plant. And it's a bit of a puzzle. Unless it's a really clear, easy identification, you have to work it out. It's like a mystery story.
Do the plants need to be alive to identify them?
You can either bring a plant that is you've just picked or cut, or you can bring a pressed plant that is dry. It's usually a bit easier to identify from a live plant, but you can definitely do the IDs from the pressed plants. And if plants are pressed properly, that is actually how they are stored for many, many years. A plant that's pressed properly, you can still identify 100 years later.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Judy Fulton, master gardener and educator with the Natural History Society of Maryland, about their bimonthly plant identification workshops called What's This Plant? I would think many of our listeners have no idea how to properly dry a plant, press a plant.
People can just put it between the pages of a book and bring it. As long as it contains all the pieces, you want to have the stem, the leaves, any seeds, flowers. If it's a perennial, you want to have the roots. Of course, if you're bringing in a piece of a tree, you're not going to bring in the whole tree or a whole shrub. But bring in as much as you can, and it can either be in a plastic bag and alive and green, or you can figure out just some way to preserve it so that you can bring it in a couple of weeks later.
Is the workshop open to anyone, or are you expecting a certain level of expertise from people who come?
Anyone can sign up. We ask that people not be younger than a mature high school student, because it does require sitting and focusing and concentrating. There are a lot of other activities at the Natural History Society that are meant for little kids, but this one is really for adults. Now, one thing that's very important about the plant identification at the Natural History Society is that once you put a name on a plant, people from all different places, even different countries, can communicate and share knowledge about the plant. So it's not just a matter of figuring out a name and saying, aha, I've done it. You can start really learning about the plants and why they're important and what good they do or what harm they do if you know the names. And you can walk out in the woods or in a field and you can see a plant and you can know why it's there and what purpose it has. So learning the names is just the first step in learning about this very important part of nature and also of where we live and what we need and what we can use.
Is there a particular mystery solved that sticks with you? Is there a plant you're particularly proud of having figured it out?
There's no particular plant. There are all lots of fun to figure out. But I guess sometimes there are surprises. For instance, if you find that you've just identified a plant that's very rare in Maryland, that's a thrill. And it's also very interesting if you have found a non-native that is invasive and causing problems in the environment, and you didn't think it was in Maryland, and all of a sudden you see it. That's very interesting.
Yeah, tell me about invasives. Is that part of what you identify?
We identify absolutely any plant. Any plant, whether it's growing in the wild or in a garden, we will help you figure out what it is.
Is every non-native plant invasive?
No. Only the plants, there's a executive action, a presidential executive action that defines a native plant, an invasive plant, as a plant that is non-native, and most important, it causes harm to the environment, the economy, or human health. If it doesn't cause any harm, there's no problem with a non-native plant.
So the keys, the identifying tools that you use, do they tell you this plant is an invasive? Do you know that as part of identifying?
There are lists of invasive plants. For instance, the Maryland Invasive Species Council has lists of invasive plants, and there are a lot of lists. There's one on the University of Maryland Extension, the website there.
I always thought the problem with invasives was primarily just crowding out natural plants, but it sounds like it's more complicated than that.
Yes, and one of the problems is crowding out natural plants. It's very important to have a lot of different species of plants to support not only life in the woods, but to support us as human beings.
Thanks for telling us about it. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Judy Fulton, Master Gardener and Educator with the Natural History Society of Maryland. Plant identification workshops called What's This Plant? Are held every second and fourth Monday of the month from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Natural History Society building, 6908 Bel Air Road in Baltimore County. Earlier, we spoke with Nick Spiro about other workshops you can take to learn about fossils and raising butterflies. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to information about all of this and about the Natural History Society's Cabinet of Curiosities fundraiser on Saturday evening. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.